Welcome to an episode of La Ventanita, the Miami Herald Food Podcast. I'm Carlos Frias, the Miami Herald Food Editor, joined every week by my co-host and my buddy, Amy Reyes.
Hi, Carlos.
What's going on?
Just trying to survive eating season.
We are in the full Miami Spice preview eating mode.
Peak eating season.
Yeah, I've just begun hurting myself by going to Fiola. Fiola was one of the spots we're going to preview. I know you guys hurt yourselves recently at, was it Sexy Fish? Where did you really hurt yourself?
We went to Sexy Fish. And then on another project that Connie's working on, she's making us eat at all the food halls too. So basically she's just trying to kill us by eating. Like just by food.
While everyone's asleep, we're eating.
Yeah, we're eating.
The Miami Herald eating for you.
Eating all the food so you don't have to.
Eating all the food so you don't have to.
So tonight we're going to another place, and I might have to tap out after this one. I think I just need to eat like a peanut butter and jelly sandwich for the next week or so.
I'm actually envious of you because you're almost done with your previews. I have like three more places I have to eat at between now and when we drop our preview that second week of August.
Yeah.
So it's like I have to do some serious eating in the next couple days. So.
I believe in you, Carlos. I think you have the power.
I'm doing my yoga.
All of us, you have the strongest stomach.
I'm doing that yoga with the wiggly stomach, you know, with
yes,
the wobbly
the
wiggly
Shakira.
Stomach. That one.
The Shakira breathing.
That one. No, not with the tongue. Not with the tongue part. But the wiggly stomach
Please
so
don't.
I can make room.
Double
U. So we're getting ready for it. Yeah, I spent my last couple days thinking about the fruit influencers. I know we've been working on this for a couple days. So, like, somebody sent me a TikTok, I want to say, like, 2 weeks ago, which the worst part of it is now I have to pay attention to TikTok, which breaks my heart.
Yeah, I'm sorry for you. Sorry for your loss.
And it was these young, I call them kids because to me, anybody under 30 is still a kid. These young guys. Rain Roata and Adele Schlegel, who kind of they've become TikTok famous because they market this tropical exotic fruit that you can get in the Redlands, and the stuff that really goes viral is stuff like that. If you can see
like
the screen.
That. If you could see the screen, you'd know her hand is doing stuff that looks dirty.
Yes, to a ginger
clutching
root.
A fruit. What's the name of that fruit right there?
The other one was an awapui. That's an awapui, which is what they call a shampoo ginger fruit. And it's like you squeeze this yucca-shaped thing, and all of its
It looks
juices
like a
come
like
out.
A green pine cone.
Yes,
you know?
That's a good description. It's a green pine
looks
cone.
It's like a green pine cone, and from that green pine cone comes a slob like substance.
Liquid. Careful.
A liquid.
Careful.
A
Be
liquid
careful.
That is looks gelatinous.
Stop.
And is
okay. Stop right there.
Yeah, it's apparently right good for your hair.
Good for your hair.
Good for your hair.
And like, obviously, they figured out that the videos that do great are stuff like that, stuff that looks vaguely phallic.
Yeah.
And stuff and fruit that is like the wrong color or strange looking. Like there you have
like
a, we had a
50 shades
like
of
bananas
pina.
That look like praying hands. yellow dragon fruit. The avocados that you can eat with the skin on. It's really, so they kind of like, they became TikTok famous. Like they have a million TikTok followers. And I was like, who are these people? And like, why are they famous for doing this to fruit? And so I spent, Matias and I spent a couple days with
well,
them.
Well, now
and,
it just sounds dirty.
Yes.
Now you're making it sound real dirty.
It did from day one. But really, honestly, they're really cool entrepreneurs because what they do is they market all this fruit that you can find in the Redland, like, and I'm not talking like mame and mango, which we all know. I mean, I'm talking real stuff that has regional names in different countries, you know, like that. Like that's called a gummy worm fruit. Don't ask me what its technical name is. I did eat that. We plucked it right off a tree, and that's what it tastes like. It's kind of like.
Do you peel it, or do you just eat it with all that stuff?
You eat the whole thing. You just pop the whole thing in your mouth.
What did it taste like, Carlos?
It tasted a little bit. It's got a little bit of like a pineapple flavor to it, like it's but not acid. Kind of like sweet, and it's like clear liquid inside. It's kind of like a little gummy worm.
Okay.
So, like, they really, I don't know. I just kind of wanted to know, nerd out, know everything about these two kids and how they got to where they are. And
so well, I wrote some words about that. The interesting part about your discovery is that their market ended up being way far, far outside of Miami. Like, yes. The people who would pay for this were people who just lived in the sticks, and well, the sticks to us, who lived far away from all of this exotic fruit and were experiencing a hunger for it, and they would pay whatever price to get it. So I think they definitely capitalized on a need. And no, the other interesting thing that you wrote was that they specialized in shipping quickly products that were very difficult for big companies to transport because they were delicate, they bruised easily, and they ripened quickly. So they found their niche.
Yeah, like all these fruits are not things that you usually see at the grocery store because they're not grown for grocery stores.
Right.
Most of the stuff that you go to the grocery, even like a Whole Foods, it's food that's grown to be able to survive the supply chain. So by the time it's picked green, it can survive being trucked across the country or across the world, you know, a week in a holding container, refrigerated or otherwise. And then it's got to sit on the shelves until people are good and ready to buy it and then bring it home and wait for it to ripen. So we're talking like potentially 10 days, you know, on some food versus they grow stuff that's like it grows on the plant like it does in nature. And it's like it's bred to grow well in Florida. They pick it and like in a day you eat it. You know what I mean? And so it's the fruit is really fresh and it's really different. And then you have like all these fruit nerds that are ordering it like Fear Factor, you know, like, oh, I want to try that new weird fruit.
That's so awesome. That is awesome.
So I wrote some words about them. If you want, you can I'm sure if you Google fruit influencers in Miami, you will find it.
Or fruit porn.
Fruit porn.
Fruit porn.
Or world's largest banana. I can't. Never make eye contact. Never make eye contact while eating a banana. It's the other thing.
Never.
That I learned.
Yeah, there's a TikTok video on their page that is scandalous.
Yeah, let's just say, get ready to cover your children's
eyes.
Two
girls, one banana.
Exactly. Thank you for saying it, so I didn't have to.
I'm sorry. I just wanted to put that image in your
head. Yep. Perfect. On that note, I think we've kept our guest this week waiting long enough. Our guest today is Mariano Carranza. Mariano, so Netflix recently launched a new season of their award-winning series, Street Food. Then the most recent season focuses on street food in the USA. So it's a Street Food USA. And Mariano was the director of the Miami episode. Mariano is a native of Lima, Peru, but he really did his homework when he tried to boil down what street food means in Miami. And he had some interesting choices that I want to talk to him about. It had things like that you would expect, things like Cuban sandwiches, but you also had the unexpected. Like there's a man from Miami Gardens who sells souse out of his house. Oh, look, that rhymes. And if you don't know what souse is, we're going to tell you. You also have Haitian food served out of a ventanita. So it's like a cross-cultural mix that's partly owned or partly founded by an Israeli guy. So I think that the episode really pulls it off. It really paints Miami with a wide palette of colors. And so that's why I wanted to talk to Mariano about this episode, not just because I was on it. I was on the episode, full disclosure, and just kind of see how he came to the idea of Miami street food. So welcome, Mariano. How are you?
Hi, how's it going? I'm good. Thank you for having me. Hi, Amy. No. Hi, Carlos.
Hi.
Thank you for waiting so patiently back, quote unquote, backstage
while we talk about fruit porn.
But how much do you want to see those videos now, right?
You're
a video-minded guy.
Sure, yeah.
I mean, two girls, one banana. I can't say it any better than that.
Avocado this long. That's what they got.
Te tengo un aguacate de
así
de largo.
Amy making gestures with her.
Yeah,
cool,
you guys
arm.
can't appreciate the obscene gesture on the audio.
Unless you're watching the video podcast. This is one you're gonna want to watch.
When
I think.
See it.
I will say though, fruit influencer sounds like the most millennial thing there is out there right now.
Ever.
Would know. You're in the millennial category, right? You fall squarely into the millennial category.
I guess so, yeah, technically speaking, yeah.
But you're one of the good ones.
I didn't know
so are
thing.
These kids. Well, they don't call themselves that. I call themselves that. So maybe I'll, maybe I'm to blame for any extra hate that they get. But they should. They're nice kids. They're super nice kids. So listen. So I wanted to play a little trailer of the show, real briefly. On you can just a part that you can appreciate video and audio, and then we can talk about it a little bit. Our director Pierre, what do you think? You want to play a little piece of that, Pierre?
The best food is on the street. Incredibly rich, diverse, bursting with flavor. That's where the good stuff is.
You can eat, fall asleep, wake up and eat again.
I want to taste everything.
It's culture, it's passion, it's love, it's family, it's friends.
Oh, that's pretty delicious.
Best carnitas I've ever tried.
I don't just cook, I love to cook. Yeah, I put that love in mine.
The slice is the ultimate street food. It's the only food I know I can fold up and put in my pocket if I want to go back to it later.
This is what America is. And out of that movement of people, you get deliciousness, you get amazing food, and it might teach you something.
Yeah, see, nice. That's that. What I love about street food is when you watch that episode, that was kind of backed by the guys that started Chef's Table, the guys that came up with Chef's Table that won every food and video award ever because they really showed, they told personal stories and showed food beautifully and told really rich stories. And you guys have done the same thing with street food, with much more accessible food. I guess, tell me a little bit about how you got involved with it and like why you wanted to tell the story of these folks.
Yeah, thank you. Every time I see that trailer, I get excited. Not because I've made it and I'm a little biased, but because it's just like, it makes me excited. How did I get involved? Well, let me tell the audience briefly about what, Chef's Table is. So Chef's Table is, for me, it's kind of like the golden standard of food documentary filmmaking. It's right. Basically 45-ish minute long documentaries in like a real kind of like documentary tradition, like the highest quality documentary filmmaking about sort of like quote unquote the best chefs in the world or like people who are doing really interesting stuff. So, you know, like you have people like Massimo Bottura, Alex Atala, Virgilio Martinez, like, you know, like kind of like the top of the game. And it was created by David Gelb and Brian McGinn and Supper Club Studios. Both of them are like incredibly talented filmmakers. Shout out to Brian, who was the one who probably gave me the opportunity. Also like a super talented filmmaker, storyteller. He's just like has really good instincts when it comes to telling stories. But basically Chef's Table is a very successful Netflix franchise that's been around for a number of years. They have a number of seasons. It's really good if you are a foodie and like to watch documentaries. It's all Netflix, so you can stream it all and binge watch it. But basically Netflix came to them and they were like, hey, we love Chef's Table. It's like really high quality television about incredible chefs, but we want to make something that's a little more accessible for like everyday people. And so we think that street food would be like an approachable way to do that. So Netflix basically came to them and they said, can you make a show like that? And so Supper Club came up, Supper Club in partnership with Boardwalk, which is the production company, Boardwalk Productions. And they came up with this show called Street Food. And so the first season is in Asia. They have, if I'm not mistaken, it's like 7 or 8 episodes throughout Asia.
Right.
And then the second season was in Latin America, which was released almost exactly at the same time that COVID hit. So it was like a really strange but also interesting timing to release that show. And at the time, I was working at CNN. What?
I was going to say, as I recall, when they were getting ready to start filming the third season, it was going to be Street Food Europe, and Europe shut down because of COVID. But a lot of the U.S. was still open. So you guys right. kind of like everybody shifted gears a little bit.
Yeah. Exactly. And you know, right before that, I was working at CNN's in-house documentary studios called Great Big Story. I was like a staff filmmaker for them, making, we can talk about it later, but I was making like short form human interest documentaries. And I've always been like a huge fan, like a nerd type, about like just watching Chef Table and watching street food. I was just so incredibly inspired and just, I was just like a huge admirer of the show, and it was kind of like a dream of mine to work for them. The studio that I was working for at CNN shut down for different financial reasons. And so I had a friend in common who put me in touch with the people at Street Food. And, I started a relationship with them. And then like months later, they came to me and they were like, "Hey, we're making this show. We're going to shoot an episode in New York. Would you like to be like, to help us out with research?" And that already was kind of like a dream come true for me. I was like, yeah, of course. Like I gave them like all kinds of like tips and hacks and like places that I love. And then after a while they offer me, the team offered me to direct the Miami episode. And so that's kind of like how that came to be.
Great. Tell me about that, about then, you know, you have Miami, go do street food in Miami. What was it like to go through that process and try to figure out which stories you were going to tell? Because I think what street food does, it usually focuses on 3 to 4 characters, and it has like an A character, like a main character. And then it tells also like 3 smaller stories with it. And like when you were going through that, like how did you decide what you wanted to tell, the story that you wanted to tell, the stories that you wanted to tell?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the show already has a format, and like it's part of a franchise and a tradition of like 2 seasons that come before that. And so we have to work within those parameters. But yeah, it follows one main character and kind of like their life journey and like hero's journey and like ups and downs. And then it follows like 3 sort of like smaller characters that are representative of the food of the city, right? Like each episode is a city. For Street Food USA, we have 6 cities. We have New York, Miami, Oahu in Hawaii, Portland, Oregon, LA, and Miami. And so I'm sorry, I'm rambling. What was the question? How did you choose?
Let's go through the characters you did choose. Let's go through the characters. So your main character is the story of Souseman Larry, which souse is not something that everybody has had. and it's so we had a picture of him up on screen, and he lives in Miami Gardens, which where I grew up, and I'm sure when he grew up it was called Carroll City, and and he has this story of he makes basically this broth of like chicken and like chunks of chicken with different spices, very vinegary. It's hot. So tell us a little bit of the story of Souseman Larry and how you came across him and what you love about his story.
Yeah. I mean, Larry was just an amazing person to work with, and was a great character for the show. Finding the characters was tough because there's so many elements. Let me just start by saying that, like, whenever you're doing an episode about a city, whatever city it is, as a director, I wanted to be extremely conscious about the decisions that you're making, because you want to represent the city like as fair as you can and as real as you can. And I hate this word, but like as authentic as you can. And like, especially a city like Miami has so many different communities, so many different flavors and colors and people. And so it's really hard, you know, to find a balance of painting a picture of all of these different communities in a fair way. I think it's almost impossible. I think I did the best I could to like be fair to as many cultures as possible that represents Miami. That being said, finding the characters was a very collaborative process. I worked with a team of, you know, like the most talented producers in the business and associate producers and researchers, local producers, local journalists. Carlos, yourself, you helped me out a lot. But it was a process of talking to a lot of people, you know, like relaying on the local knowledge, relaying on local journalists and food people. And it was a long process of basically talking to a lot of people. After talking to a lot of people, one of the people you recommend me to talk to was Starix Smith, aka
the hungry black man.
The hungry black man, yeah. And
that's right. He's a great food blogger who now has a restaurant in Miami. Shout out to Starix's Smith and Webster in North Miami.
Exactly. Yeah, I can't wait to go back to Miami and go to his restaurant and try it out. But Starix is the one who told me about Salzman Larry. Starix is. He has a blog, like multi-platform blog called The Hungry Black Man. And he is a food journalist and storyteller who really does the legwork of like going around the country to find black-owned restaurants to celebrate black food, to celebrate black excellence, and to really like, you know, like shine a light to these places that haven't had the attention that they deserve. And yeah,
he amplifies a lot of voices that deserve it.
Yeah. And he also happens to be from Miami. Like Miami is his hometown. You know, he travels all over the country, but he is from Miami. So he's very passionate about the Miami food scene. And he gave me a bunch of names and I did my homework and I went to talk to a bunch of people. And the person that like really resonated the most with the ethos of the show that we're doing was Salzman Larry.
Was he hesitant? Larry, did he immediately want to do it, or was he like, meh? Did you have to talk him into it, or was he just on board out the gate?
I think I wouldn't say he immediately wanted to do it.
He's very revelatory, and he goes into a lot of like his history and his problems with drug abuse and stuff like that, and all the, you know, horrible things that happened during that period. And it's definitely a redemption story, obviously, but like not everybody would be willing to go to get that personal, you know, through the lens of their food business. You know, it was a really interesting story. But I was,
he's very self-reflective and very like, which I thought is which really made it like, wow, he was very human. He really accepted the things that he did that went wrong in his life, and you guys really highlighted the ways in that he tried to make amends. Yeah. So what was that like? What is he saying to try to get him on board? Whether he was like, "Who are you?
Why do you want to get up in my business?"
I gave him a call. I told him what the project was and what we were working on, and he immediately invited me to the cigar lounge where he always goes to in Miami Gardens, which is the largest black city in Miami. And I was like, I need to record you on my phone, and this bar is like a little too loud. Can we go to your house? And he was like, yeah, of course. So nice. we ended up going to his house. And we sat down and we did what we call a pre-interview, and I just asked him questions, and he was very open with his story. I think he has come to a point that he likes to share the story that he has, you know. I'm jumping ahead of myself a little bit, but
it's fine. Go ahead.
I just want to tell one quick anecdote. At the end of the shoot, it was like a 5-day shoot, and we interviewed him a couple of days. And at the end of the shoot, he told me, this has been exhausting, but at the same time, it's felt like a therapy, and it's felt like I let all of this stuff out. So, I mean, I think it was like also like a whole thing for him, a whole process mm-hmm. for him. But I am exceptionally grateful and thankful for, you know, like at the end of the day, like it's Larry's story. Well, it's Miami's story, but it's also like, you know, like for the sake of his story, it's like he's sharing the story with us. I'm just here to like work as a vessel and like help to communicate the story with, you know, like some techniques that we have as storytellers, right? But it's really Larry telling his story, and I'm very grateful for him to open up with us.
You obviously tried his sauce, right? Because I have never in my life had sauce. Have you had sauce, Carlos?
I've had it, but I've not had his.
Okay.
It is an acquired taste.
What does it taste like? Because I've never had it.
Well, tell us, Mariano. Tell us, like, as you saw make it, like, were you like, oh, I really want to eat that? Or I'm not sure that I want to eat that. Sauce is an acquired taste. Tell us about it.
So sauce is an acquired taste. It's also very specific to Miami. Because if you go in like Google Images and type South, you're going to see something completely different. It's like a, like you're going to see like almost like a cheese, like gelatin cheese that's mostly from the Caribbean. That's also South, but like these kind of South, it's like basically Miami South. It's a black soup or stew. And I'm going to steal Hungry Black Man's words here. It's like a chicken broth went to hell and came back. And that's what South is. It tastes like vinegar and, you know, a lot of spices. It's really
there's like a gumbo element to it. Like, right? Like if you've had a gumbo, it's kind of thickened and it's rich. But it also is very vinegary. You know, it's got a bunch of vegetables in it as well as like,
is it like, you know, would it be like a Dominican chunks. Sancocho type of thing? Or would it be, more watery than that?
It's a little watery, or it's more like a stew. It's more like a soup, like a big soup running. And so,
yeah, it is like a very soup. It is like a soup. It's like a punch in the face. I liked it. I really liked it, but it's also an acquired taste. Because you can feel the vinegar, you can feel the acidity of like lime juice, you can feel all the spices, you can feel it in your nose. It's great.
Is it spicy? Like, is it hot for your mouth? Like, does it feel hot on your tongue? Like spicy hot?
No, it's not spicy hot. It's like full of like, it's very rich.
Okay.
And you also have two types. You have pork sauce and you have chicken sauce.
And do they put all parts of the chicken in it, or is it a specific part of the chicken that goes in it?
I'm actually not sure. I think he uses wings, but I don't quote me on that. And also for the pork, he uses a very specific cut that he has, like his go-to guy that he buys pork from. I'm blanking on it. I think he calls it a 2-on-2 or something like that. I'm not sure, but he uses like a very specific part of the pig
mixture.
I'm not a South expert. Parts.
I think you need to go on a field trip, Carlos.
The truth is that like the tastiest parts of the pig, you don't necessarily want to see. Like all the all those animals, like those bones and the la tripa, you know, all this stuff. Like that's what gives those soup based things an incredible flavor. Like you just drink it and you're like, this tastes amazing, and I don't know why. And I'll tell you why. It's because it's all those parts that you can't just put on a plate, or Americans will freak out. Yes, because Americans will freak out. So like I've heard sauce made with, you know, pig's feet and like goat head, like, you know what I mean? Like every part. It's basically using every bit of the animal that you have to make this incredibly nutritious, filling dish, you know? So we have a picture right there. Is that a picture of Mariano?
That can't be South.
No, that's not South. No, that's a different kind of South. And that goes back to what I was saying, that like the South that we profiled in this episode, it's like very specific to Miami. It's like,
and he says it's Miami, my own thing. He says it's my own thing. Like the spirits brought the recipe down to me.
The spirits told him what to do to it, and he
yes,
and he had it was there was a divine. This is a divine recipe.
Yes, you got to listen to the spirits when they tell you to put more vinegar in. That you listen to the spirit.
More vinegar in.
And so I really love that because it's a Miami episode, and you start with Black Miami, which is like. We overlook it so much. It's so overlooked. I'm not going to say we overlook it because whatever, but it's essentially such a building block of Miami. Like Bahamian culture, Jamaican culture, Haitian culture is like fundamentally the building blocks of Miami. Way before the Cubans came, but you know the Cubans are loud, so they take over the politics. So that voice gets heard, and frankly, more of the Cubans that we have here are lighter skinned, and you know as we know in America. The lighter skin always gets the those voices get amplified more than the others. So I really love that, like, you took this very Miami story and brought it. So that kind of leads me to another. Oh no, go ahead.
And I want to quote Starix here. He said, you know, like the city was incorporated by Black folks, Black Americans, Black Caribbeans, and. You know, it's a city that was built by by Black people and incorporated by Black people and has a really long tradition of Black culture. And that's what it's now called Black Miami. So I knew that it was going to be a choice because a lot of people, when they think of Miami, they think of Cuba and they think of Latin America. But I thought it was the right choice to make to show Larry and show him as a way of representing the Black community in Miami.
Right. I love what then one of the other characters or features of the show was the Cuban Frita, which I have not seen done for an international audience. And I was so glad to see the Cuban Frita get its day in the sunshine. Tell me. Tell me about them.
That was all you.
Well,
you recommended the Cuban Frita.
And then I went on a
Cuban Frita tour.
Oh man, tell me about that tour. What did you think the first time you took a bite of a frita? Because I was like, remember, it's not going to taste like any hamburger you've ever had.
No, I mean so they call them fritas because of the little potato sticks, which in Peru we call papitas al hilo, and they're like somewhat very similar in a way, you know, right.
Are they called mariquitas fritas. Or something?
No, papitas. It's just papitas. Yeah, they're okay. Just papitas. They're shaved potatoes, kind of deep fried so that they're little crispy shreds. Yeah, like people some places cheap out and they do the picnic. You ever seen the picnic fried potato sticks? Some places will use those, but that's a cheat. You can't do that. That's not a real frita. Can't do that.
Yeah, they don't do that at Rey de la Fritas.
Rey de la Frita does not cheat any corners. They cut zero corners.
Yeah, what did I think? I thought it was so good. I mean, like, you have the fluffy like bun, and then you have like the texture of the actual like potato sticks that are like amazing, and then you have the amazing flavor of the patties, right? So it's so good. And like Mercy was saying, that there's so many people that love them so much that they would just go directly from the Miami airport to eat them at just with the carry-ons. Like they would just go directly to the restaurant.
Yeah,
this is
funny.
One moment in the show where she's talking about her dad and how he would look across the restaurant when it was full and he'd just want to cry. It was so cute.
That moment makes me cry.
Yeah,
very often.
It does make you
choke. I've seen my own episode for work like probably like 60 times, and like every time like that moment gets me.
Yeah. You know what? I think we have a little clip of it, and that of Mercy talking about the Rey de la Frita story. Pierre, do you want to play a little piece of it?
My family came to the U.S. escaping revolution in Cuba. Ever since I was small, I've always seen my parents work very hard, and it was very important for my dad to be known as the Rey de la Frita. I remember him standing sometimes in the crowd, and when the restaurant was really full, he would like get misty, and I would tell him, "Papi, why are you crying?" Because I'm not crying. Because look at this. This is amazing. Even though he's passed away already, he's always been very present. We follow his footsteps, and our family business is still run by us. It includes my mom, my brother, myself, my husband.
Oh, you were a window waitress for a long time.
Forever. Nobody makes coffee faster than me.
I love talking with Mercy because she immediately puts a smile on my face. She loves the business. She loves what her dad started there. And she keeps it going at a really high level.
Our frita recipe is very secretive. We prepare everything when nobody's around. Aquí tiene su frita. Que lo aproveche, caballero. Que disfrute. Gracias. El Rey de la Frita is very much part of my DNA, and I'm very proud of our family business.
Oh man, that made me hungry.
She's adorable, Mercy. I can't.
Yeah, she's super cute.
She immediately just makes me smile, and you know that's what you need to be to the Danita waitress.
She's amazing. She's really great, and I also want to say, you know, like. Mercy was the one who was telling us the story and the main character for this section of the show, but also a shout out to her entire family, Mercy's brother and mom and husband. They're all a really tight family, and you know, like it's a family restaurant in every sense of the word. They really work, Carlos, like you were saying, like a machine. You know, they And you can't fake passion. That's one thing that you absolutely cannot fake. Yeah. And you can see that in her eyes and how she talks about the family business and her dad and their immigration story, which is, you know, like a very Cuban story, but also a Latin American story, and that, you know, like that's how the immigration part comes, you know, and you see it in the food, and that, I think that's the beauty of it.
Yeah, a great restaurant is like a piece of art, is an artwork, you know, like an artist creates a thing and it's his vision, you know. A Michelangelo is only a Michelangelo because of his vision. And a restaurant is the same way, which is why it's hard for a restaurant to be passed down to another generation, you know. And sometimes you have great success with people like this that believe in that vision, you know, and they take care of it, you know, like.
But I think in this case, you know, too, it was probably because they're really good at one thing, you know. They're really, really good at the frita. You know what I'm saying? And he passed that down to her, and she was like, okay, I can do this. You know, and like they focused in on who they know who their audience is, and they just, you know, kept grinding at what they do best. So, because there's lots of restaurants that, you know, they just, the second generation can't continue it.
It's like the 10,000 hour rule of genius. Like once you've done one thing over and over and over and over, you become, you get the title of genius.
You become the master. Yes.
You become a master at the thing. And they are literally a master at that frita. That frita cannot be improved on. It can't, as what it is, it can't be improved on. So now I want one. God damn it.
No, now it's over.
I love it. Like that story let you tell a little bit about the story of the Ventanita, which when you asked me about what is Miami street food, I was like, it all comes, so much of it comes through our little windows, our little coffee windows that have been converted for coffee, but also for fritas. And like Naomi's Garden has like a Haitian Ventanita. They do like Haitian food and Caribbean food on a street corner, like no dine-in, and it's just all served through the little window.
It almost looked like a Haitian fritanga / Ventanita, because it's like one of those places where they're not just selling you snacks, they're selling you like a whole meal with like rice and beans and like meat and everything.
Completa.
Yeah, una completa, exactly. But they're doing it through the window, so it's pretty amazing.
Right, and that's Noam and Melissa. Melissa has been the cook there for something like over 30 years. Tell me about them, because they have an interesting story, because it's all black run, but it's founded by an Israeli guy, right? Which, I mean, Israeli and Miami has a strong Israeli and Jewish background and culture too, so that's not surprising at all.
Yeah, so they are Israeli Yemeni. So they're both from Israel and Yemen. And we wanted to, you know, add the Haitian story to the piece, because, you know, like you have little Haiti, Miami. From the research that I've done and talking to so many people, you know, like the Haitian community is really, really important for the fabric of the city. And usually doesn't get the spotlight that they deserve. So we wanted to tell a Haitian story, and we ended up finding this restaurant that is Israeli owned and Yemeni owned, and but run by Haitian cooks and employees. And Melissa has been the cook and the head chef of the restaurant for a long time. And her food is just amazing. You know, they have all kinds of Haitian delicacies. I really encourage you to go try it.
And it's in a part of Miami that serves Miami's Haitian community, because it's right in between Little Haiti and Little River, and like that community is Black Miami and it's Haitian Miami and very Caribbean Miami. So it really, like, you cannot fake that. You know what I mean? You can't, unless you have people from the community that are holding up your restaurant, that are cooking it, that are incorporating those flavors. You're going to go out of business. You know, it's like one of the most famous Nicaraguan restaurants in the city of Miami is Yambo. And it was founded by a Cuban immigrant. But because he's like, he respects, it's obviously changed over like 30 or 40 years, I'm sure. But he came in with the idea, like, I'm going to respect Nicaraguan food and culture and like acknowledge where things overlap. but also keep, you know, because obviously like a lot of Caribbean food shares similar features with their own spices on it. But I just thought that that's funny, you know, but the only reason a place like that stays in business that long is because you really embrace
it. Yeah.
Yeah. It's legit. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I love
that you guys. Yeah. And they cook a lot of food. They cook a lot of food every day and they have a lot of clientele. And the funny part that, you know, if you watch the show, you'll see that it's like, it's kind of like modeled after a Cuban Ventanita. So you have like the Cuban Ventanita, the Haitian culture, and like, it kind of like speaks about this, like, you know, idea of Miami being like a melting pot, like a different cultures, yeah. which sounds like such a cliche, but it's true. Like you do have a lot of different cultures coming together.
Yeah. And then you guys couldn't finish up without talking about the Cuban sandwich. And you found that, I thought, one of the places that makes maybe the best Cuban sandwich in Miami, which is the Luis Galindo Latin Americas. I think they own two of them, right? And you guys spent a lot of time at one of them on Coral Way over in like 100 and something Avenue or something like that.
Yeah, exactly. So during the research of this project, I ate way too many Cuban sandwiches.
Wait, Pierre, I want to play the clip.
Yeah, let's play the clip.
Play the clip, Pierre. Yeah, Pierre, go ahead.
A Cuban sandwich is like an explosion of flavors in your mouth because you have the cheesy goodness, but then you have the sweet ham, the roasted pork, and that crunchy, buttery, soft bread on the outside. The Cuban sandwich is made by our loncheros, and loncheros is sort of slang for Cuban sandwich master. There's a special technique to making a good Cuban sandwich. They hardly ever touch the sandwich. Everything is done with a knife. And the sandwich presses are 40 years old, probably more. They've been seasoned for so long that the taste that comes out of those presses, you just won't find it anywhere else. It's just heaven in your mouth.
The thing that makes the Cuban sandwich is putting it in a hot press so that when you take a bite, it should be warm, it should crackle, the cheese should pull when you pull it away. That's a Cuban sandwich.
All right, can I just share this anecdote? So I, Mariano, as you may or may not know, our listeners probably do know that I am a sandwich aficionado. Like the sandwich is as at the core of my...
You believe that everything is a sandwich.
Yes, everything is a sandwich and everything that is sandwich related is at the core of the things that I love. And
you're controversial. Controversial
sandwich. Yeah, he is very controversial.
Advocate.
So I was like, I want a sandwich press in my house, but I don't want one that you go to like, you know, Bed Bath & Beyond. Excuse me. I contacted the owner of Versailles and I was like, can you get me a commercial sandwich press? And after much back and forth, like I brought it home, I plugged it in, and it immediately overloaded the circuits in my kitchen.
Oh my God.
No way.
It just won't run. Nothing horrible happened. It just like, it heats up for about 2 minutes and then it shuts off the circuit in my house. Like too much juice. I flew too close to the sun. I wanted too much from sandwich.
You should have got yourself a George Foreman like everybody else does.
Stop. But you know what? But you watch that clip, like if you watch the show and folks watching online who saw the clip, like that press, because it's seasoned over the years. And that's the thing. The press that he got me, that he hooked me up was as an old one that he'd had. And those things are seasoned from just like use
so
over
much
the
meat
decades.
Exposure.
Oh,
wait,
yes.
But do you still have it?
Yes, I have it in my kitchen right now. I'm trying to figure out if I can, I'm going to have to rewire my kitchen.
There has to be some kind of circuit breaker you can get. That won't
it
destroy
is.
Your
yeah,
house.
Exactly.
I have to get the circuit rewired, but
now I want to know, like you're so deep into this process that I'm rooting for you. I want you to like figure it out.
I want you to figure this out too, Carlos.
I might just do it. Like part of me is like, man, do I need to bring them the thing back and I just settle for the George Foreman, you know? But
no, you need to get the handyman. You need to get a handyman over
yeah,
there.
Yeah, well, now they know. Now they're going to know. And I feel like you should go on Reddit or, like, just become obsessed and, like, just find a way to, like, find, I don't know, like, a converter. Like, I really want you to accomplish this mission, Carlo.
Well,
I agree.
You should record the whole thing.
And I want you to make me some sandwiches. That's what I want.
We'll drop an independent film about my sandwich obsession and my commercial press at home. Wait till I start. I actually have a ventanita right in my kitchen, so I'm just going to start selling it outside my kitchen window. Sandwiches.
It's going to be called Flagami Bay. That's the name of your ventanita.
That's it.
Flagami Bay.
Yeah, specializing in Flagami sandwiches. That way I don't have to.
Carlos, I really think that you're wasting your time right now. You need to go get your circuits rewired so we can make some sandwiches.
Okay, well, whatever. You come pay the electrician.
No. You got this.
Carlos, not to put you in the spot and turn the tables here, but I do want to ask you a question. What is a sandwich?
What do you mean, what is a sandwich? A sandwich is...
Because I know you have a very controversial opinion about what sandwiches are, which I might not necessarily agree with all of your sandwich opinions, but I want to hear them out.
A sandwich is something that's encased in an edible carbohydrate, right? That's basically it. I have a very
open opinion. How do you define encased?
Well, that's what it is. It's just encased. That's encased so that the vehicle
could not be eaten with your fingers. Correct?
Yeah. No. Exactly. You can. Yeah. Like lasagna is a sandwich because it's layers of.
What?
Layers of pasta.
This is when he goes off the rails.
Right? An empanada is a sandwich. Look.
Okay. Yeah. Look. That's fine.
All right. An empanada is clearly a sandwich because the missing link of all sandwiches is the uncrustable. You ever had an uncrustable? Probably not because you grew up in Lima. It's like a.
No. What's an uncrustable?
No. Probably not because he's not a gringo.
It's a prepackaged peanut butter. It's a prepackaged peanut butter and jelly sandwich that is crimped closed. And all the edges are cut out, so it looks like a little bread empanada.
This is what American parents have to give their kids because they don't like to eat crusts.
Exactly.
It's basically American children, for some reason, don't like the crusty outer part of the bread. I don't know what we've done with this country, where we've damaged our children.
And me as a kid, I was like, that's the best part.
It is
like,
the good part.
It's the toasty, flavorful part.
But anyway,
so that thing is crimped closed, and once you've crimped the sandwich closed, then anything that's encased, if you can call that a sandwich, then... That opens the door to empanadas, dumplings, pierogies,
is a calzones. Taco a sandwich?
Yes.
A taco is a sandwich. A taco is a sandwich.
Because, a quesadilla is a sandwich too.
Also a sandwich. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
A ravioli?
Sandwich. Little tiny sandwiches that you eat with a knife and fork.
You could grab it on the sides.
Exactly. It's a pizza roll, and that's a sandwich.
Let's agree to disagree here. What about an avocado toast?
No, that's an open.
That's
open face.
That's a sandwich, Carlos.
No,
that's a sandwich.
If you put bread on either side, it's a sandwich. It's got to have bread on more than one side.
You once said that a pizza is a sandwich.
No. I said a pizza is not a sandwich. A pizza is an open face sandwich.
Then avocado toast is an open face sandwich.
Yeah, but that's like a cousin of the sandwiches. That doesn't really count. That's a sandwich.
I can't
cousin.
Believe Mariano has reignited your passion for. Sandwiches.
I'm like the Hulk who's always angry. I'm always passionate about the sandwich. That's
what about
secret.
A hot dog? Which is the obvious question. 100% I know, but that's
a sandwich.
No, that's 100% a sandwich. That any arguments to the contrary that is not a sandwich are completely.
In fact, I think the hot dog is the originator.
It's only one piece of bread. It's not two because it
doesn't
it's
matter.
Not
it's encased. It's encased. It's encased. Now, what is it? It's the hot dog is sandwiched between two pieces of bread. Right? It's sandwiched in the bun. Now, let me tell you, you take the sandwich out and you put meatballs in. What do you have? It's a meatball
sandwich.
All right.
I can't believe that you're saying that a ravioli is a sandwich and an avocado toast is not. Like, see, that's where I lose you. Like, I'm just like,
But it's open-faced. The avocado toast only has avocado on top of the bread, and it's not. It's got to be on more than one side. Yes.
And then you have an avocado toast.
If you agree that's how it's served, then that's what it is. Like pizza's not a sandwich because folding it on your own, it's not made that way. You know what I mean? It's not made to be eaten that way. You have converted it, but it's a converted sandwich.
I think Mariano's argument, once you put sauce on it, a sauce that overwhelms the whole thing and it prevents you from eating it with your fingers.
No.
Then I think it goes from being a sandwich to being pasta.
No, but a pasta is a sandwich. Deep fry the ravioli. All right, we're going to have to move on. We're going to have to move on. Because
segue into pizza. The New York episode, which I was one of the research consultants on, has a really nice scene about pizza. So you should also check that one out.
Cool. I do want to check that out. I confess, I have not binged the whole season yet. I watched the Miami episode. Like when you texted me at 6 a.m. Miami time, hey, you should watch this show. It's available. I watched it with my coffee and I was like, you know, I have to say, I think you did a really great job. Part of me was nervous. I was, because anytime you lend your expertise to someone, you know, and then you let them kind of create their own thing, you know. I was nervous, like, how's it going to turn out? But I thought you painted a really Miami in a way that it doesn't, a lot of those voices don't get highlighted. And it's 100% Miami at the same time. So I thought you did a great job, man.
Thank you so much.
So, Mariano, before we let you go, we ask everybody that comes on the show to play our game, which is Kiss, Marry, Kill, but with food. You ever play Kiss, Marry, Kill?
Okay. All right, of course.
All right, you got to kiss, marry, kill. So because you were in Miami and you talked about all this Miami food. So let's say you have souse, okay. You have a frita, and should we give him? What should we give him, Amy? Should we give him a griot? Should we give him Haitian
griot? Yeah, give him a griot.
And we'll do a Haitian griot. So you have Haitian griot, you have souse. Southman Larry and Herrera Frita. Which do you kiss, marry, and kill?
You're going to get him.
Oh, God. I mean, you're really putting me on the spot because I can't kill anyone because then people are going to get offended.
Well, personal, it comes down to personal flavors. Listen, this is the game. This is the game. This is what you have to do.
Okay. I would definitely marry the Frita.
Andrew, marry the Frita. Why was that one marriage worthy?
Because it's so good, like indulgent. I would kiss the souse because it's a punch in the face, and you know, a kiss.
Every now
is
and then,
good
you
enough.
Just need to get punched.
Yes, yes. Sometimes you need to get punched.
Yeah.
In the face.
And I am going to get myself out of trouble and say that I would kill the Cuban sandwich because I've already had so many of them and I love them so much. But,
okay.
But
okay.
During research, I just ate so many of them. I went to like
you
every
OD'd
possible
on Cuban
sandwich.
He never wants to see another Cuban sandwich in his life.
Maybe a media luna. Also, shout out to your buddy Seth, the Burger Beast, who gave me a bunch of really good places to eat and a completely out of nowhere. But he also has amazing hot sauces, which. I'm getting shipped to New York now every once in a while.
Oh,
very nice. The green one is really good.
The green sauce is fantastic. He's a past Ventanita guest. So if you haven't heard his interview, you should go check it out. That man is passionate about. He is the guy that appreciates Miami street food like 100%. He's very much a comfort food king of Miami.
He really likes it.
A secret burger dinner that I got invited to.
That's right.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that.
Makes me feel like a food influencer now.
Oh, yep. Yeah. Oh, no. We have all kinds of interesting stuff to take you to when you get back to Miami.
Yeah. I mean, Seth, if you're listening and you want to invite me to your secret party, let me know. I'll go.
Well, Mariano, thank you so much for making so much time, man. Thank you for coming on the show, for talking about street food. Thank you for asking me to lend my 2 cents for the show. And it looks fantastic. I hope that
congratulations.
People watch it.
It looks really great. You did a great job.
I think you painted Miami in a really great way, man.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you so much to both of you. And I just want to end by saying thank you to my entire team at Boardwalk and Supper Club, to Brian McGinn, again, who gave me the opportunity, to Drew Palombi, who was an exceptional producer, and Daniel Milder, who was a great mentor for the show. And I just want to end with one phrase that I'm one of my good friends, her name is Stephanie. She goes by La Tropi Kitchen. And she told me something yesterday that really resonated with me. She said, for me, food is not only a business, it's redemption, it's therapeutic, and it's community. And I think, you know, like that's kind of like the DNA that we're trying to show with our show. And for, I would add to what she said, to me, food is also about storytelling. It's about our roots. It's about identity. It's about who we are, where we come from. And yeah, I mean, we're trying to tell stories through food and show what these cities are and what they represent and what America is, you know? So hopefully, you know, if you've listened to this hour long conversation, you will watch the show. Hopefully you like it. You can find me on social media on like Twitter, Instagram. And if you do watch the show, especially the Miami episode and the New York episode, which are the ones that I worked on, but like really the whole season is just fantastic. So if you do watch it, I would love to hear your thoughts and your comments, and you can always reach me on social media or email or my website or whatever. But I do want to hear what people have to say about the show, and spread the word. Go watch Street Food USA. Just premiered on Netflix.
We'll do it. We're all going to watch it. Thank you, Mariano. We appreciate your time, buddy.
Bye. Nice to meet you.
Thank you, Carlos. Enjoy Spain. Thank you, Amy, for having me. Thank you so much. Bye.
That was great.
Wow, you did a lot of figureo on that show, huh?
I was, I was surprised how much clips they use. I was a little puffy. I got to say a little puffy
Carlos.
In that episode.
Was this
I looked at it and I was like,
this was before
my... This was before my big before I started intermittent fasting and I got myself back into my pants.
No, but you look cute,
dude. I appreciate it. You know what? It's funny that he talks about the storytelling through food because I, you know, that's obviously what I love about it. You know, it's what I love to do. I think that's why I enjoyed that show and I was hopeful for it because, those shows are the ones that people watch. Nobody's watching the review shows. Nobody's watching the Miami Spice shows. You know what I mean? Nobody's making whole shows and stories about those things because
they're not as accessible.
They're not. I mean, really, you can really relate with stories like this. And I thought they did a good job. So
yeah, I thought it was fun. It was fun to watch.
It really was.
And I got to see my friend. I was like, oh, I know him.
Well, Amy, what do you think? I feel
like
that's a show.
Yeah, that's a show.
Next week, I know you're going to be taking some time off, so we're going to see if maybe we pre-record some episodes. Or you know what? Maybe we'll just take 2 weeks off. I don't know. We'll probably pre-record episodes.
No, I'm always down. I'm down for whatever. So you just let me know. I'm here. Yeah. I'm here with my white girl stomach to talk about everything I've eaten throughout the week. It's all good.
We're workaholics, so we'll figure out a way to probably make 2 shows anyway.
For sure.
All right, Amy. Peace out.